Welcome to the Destination Next podcast. This is a podcast hosted by me, Chris Hall, in collaboration with Sterker. With this podcast, we're going to be celebrating everything endurance, supporting the everyday athlete who are maybe not necessarily in the limelight. People are now going further, faster, and better on the products they're training with and with the equipment they've got. Sterker offer a range of nutritional, carbohydrate-based products that are vegan and super friendly on your stomach. And you can use discount code NEXT10 at www.sterker.com to get 10% off your next order. I've done it before a few times. No one likes forgetting to record a podcast. It's like when you get like 20 minutes into it and you realise that the conversation's, the exciting bit's gone.
Then you have before. To do it all forced and it's all just a bit awkward.
I did that. I was speaking to someone.
Yeah.
And it was an hour and a half, and I didn't record any of it.
Oh, my, an hour and a half.
And I couldn't ask him to do it again. I just pretended the file broke or something, and then I just spoke right again. Oh, dear.
So the problem is, like, I've always found that you get, like, I've always tried to make a point when I've done these. There's those little flies in my house at the moment. There's another one. I've tried to make this real point when I've done these of like always talking to people before pressing record, because I think it's much better, especially if it's people I don't know. Like, I know all three of you, but if it's people I don't really know, it just makes things a bit more relaxed, and it doesn't mean it's really awkward straight away, and you just kind of like breaks about the barriers a little bit. Certain people are really good and you don't really, it's like 2 minutes and you just like, cool, I know this is good to record. Some people it's like, it can be like half an hour.
Hang on, let's see.
Yeah, it's been 20 minutes.
The guys are
not
doing well.
No, but we've been having a general catch up. We've been actually having an actual chat, so it's different. And so basically, we've known each other for several years now. I think I've known of Steezy really, I don't even know when I first heard of it, but I remember it kind of just appeared in a very good way and just like thinking, that's kind of cool.
I think it feels like it's been around for longer than it has been.
Has it been two and a half years?
Yeah.
Coming up for three?
I think three this September?
Three in September?
Yeah.
It was 2020, like just before Christmas, kind of October time, 2020.
And it was like, I mean, I think I'll explain sort of like how we all kind of met, and then I'll let you explain what Steezy is and how Steezy kind of started. But so I think I basically had seen Steezy on social media, which I think probably quite a few people had. And I thought, that's fucking cool. I could get behind that. And then I guess like that was just how it sat for a while to me. And then Toby, our very lovely mutual friend, love Toby,
Cold Dark North Toby.
I'd had this idea about organizing a ride, like a group ride, and using it as a way of fundraising for charity. And I was kind of open to what charity or charities it was, but I did the ride, which was 107 miles every day during the 107th Tour de France. Like the biggest success I think that came out of that challenge, well, there's two. One was the amount of money it raised for charity, and the other massive success that came out of it was the amount of people that came and rode with me on different days. And I'm someone that definitely, I know it, that when I have company, especially on these kind of challenges, I ride better, I feel better. Because if I don't, I get a bit wrapped up in my head, and it's never, and sometimes that's good, sometimes it's really bad. The irony is I ride a hell of a lot on my own normally. But the challenge is a different kind of kettle of fish. But yeah, one of the things that I think was such a success of that challenge was having people appear and like join the different parts of it and kind of, you know, hearing their stories and their backgrounds and why they'd come out for the certain sections or segments of the day. And I messaged Toby, or I put it out there on social media, being like, if I was to organize a ride, would people be interested? And it was like an overwhelming yes response. So I was like, okay, cool, that's good to know. And then the next poll I put up was like, if I charged you to do it, but I don't keep the money goes to charity, are you still interested? And same thing, it was like an overwhelming yes response. And then Toby during, and then there was a couple of other questions in the poll, and then Toby messaged me being like, you know, anything I could do to help, of course, you know, I'm here to help out. You know, Toby being very Toby, Tate being a fantastic dad to everyone. And I was like, yeah, that sounds great, mate. Like, that's a really, that'd be really helpful, because I to be honest, I kind of was like, the organization of that kind of thing, I struggled to find the time to do it a lot of the time. And Toby is very, very good at organizing things like that. You know, he's, with the Cold Dark North stuff, he's done a lot of it. He's organized routes and rides for so many different people. And then we sat there and we were both just, we both sat there and we're talking. And I turned around to him and I said, mate, we are two middle-aged white men trying to organize a group ride. This just doesn't feel very, doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel very accepting. And I mean, everyone talks, says, you know, diversity being, has been like a buzzword, I think, for the last couple of years, but it just doesn't feel very open and accepting to many people. It's like two white guys, you know, middle-aged. I'm a bit younger than Toby. Toby's a bit older than me, but like, we're, you know, middle-aged white guys who they could be perceived as coming from a privileged background. And you know, it didn't feel right. And so that's when we got in touch with you. And I think Toby really sort of because I wasn't really sure what, how to, I couldn't figure out in my head how to kind of break that barrier down and try and make something that was truly, I believe, truly very welcoming to anyone, which I believe is what we've done. And I don't think we, I genuinely don't think we could have done it without you three, like, hands down. No, not at all. Like, you three, to me, for the rides that we've done, the Chase the Last Long Days, which was the coast to coast, and the Lakes and Dales Loop, which was not a thing before anyone asks. They couldn't have happened without Steezy, fundamentally. You brought so much to that that we could never have imagined or dreamed or envisioned. Or, you know, basically what I'm saying is you are all very good people and you're doing amazing things. I don't know how often that gets told to you, but I think it's really important to...
We're all blushing.
Can't tell with the cameras, can we? And I think I don't want to attempt to butcher what Steezy is. I think it's better coming from you explaining what Steezy is and why you set it up as well.
Go on.
Well, me and Taylor and I went to university together, and we were in the cycling club, and we like went on a tour, and it was a bikepacking tour, and we like had such a great time, and then kind of were both leaving university and both moving into the cycling industry. And just for talking about, like, wouldn't it be nice if we had a great space for loads of cool people to ride in that wasn't focused around competitiveness, but like was truly not, I don't know how to say it in a good way, where it was like, it was truly like everyone could join, or like women, non-binary and trans people could join. But the reason we were like, we don't want to include, but why we're making this a space for specifically that, was because we often found that when we went to clubs and spaces, is that there was the element of a lot of that group feeling like they didn't belong in cycling. And so by creating a space to be like, this is for us, we're going to have a sick time, we're going to do it ourselves, felt really empowering and really just enjoyable. And I think that it was something that grew from naturally recognizing the need for a space for women and non-binary people and trans people to empower themselves to ride like that. And so we started Steezy, and I'm sure Taylor can tell you more about the social media and that, because she was the one that started the social media and made it pick up very quickly.
Can I also just steal the show from your second, Taylor. The Steezy name came from, like, all of us guys would just ride together and we thought we were just absolutely sick on bikes. So we would just be like going down a trail, be like, Steezy, Steezy. And then it kind of just became a thing where we were like, you know what, let's just call it Steezy Collective because, you know, we're Steezy.
It's such a good name.
I feel like since Steezy started, Kitty, like, I don't know if you feel like this, but, like, I feel like, and maybe it's just also because now I, like, know more people in the scene, but also groups like Steezy have popped up, and I mean, like, we've had that conversation about, like, how many awesome groups are popping up, and, like, it's amazing, but I don't feel and haven't felt for a long time the way that I felt when we were riding in university together. Like, I feel like my spaces are everywhere now, and I can't quite pinpoint, like, exactly why that is necessarily, but I'm really grateful for it. And I'm really grateful for people like Chris and Toby who, like, reach out to those groups. And I'm so thankful that you did reach out to us, because I feel like a lot of people don't know where to start. Like, a lot of people, like, want their group rides or their thing, whatever the thing is, even if it's not a thing, to be inclusive. And I feel like, yeah, like, there's no shame in, because I remember that first video chat, like, when you guys reached out to us and you were kind of, like, nervous, like, you even sort of alluded to it, like, you didn't know how to, like, break that ice, how to say, like, I don't quite know how to do this, will you help? You know, and of course, like, we were super glad to help, and we knew exactly how to do it because we were already doing it. And, yeah, like, there's no shame in, like, being like, hey, if we do this together, we can do it a little bit better. And it's just, like, kind of freaking awesome. And yeah, like Kitty said, like, Steezy has grown into, like, something bigger than I ever could have imagined. And, like, yeah, I love it. And also, like, Steezy is, like, a vibe. Like, that's what I will say, because we kind of started this conversation as, like, what is Steezy? And, like, it literally is just, like, a really good vibe.
And I think we all always say it, like, we don't really know how or why, but it's just, there's so many cool people in Steezy. But I think that's just because the people we want to be in it are just, not saying that anyone, like, no one else is, but everyone just is really cool, and it becomes such, like, whenever we have a ride or an event or anything, it just, we always get messages afterwards saying how special it felt, and it always feels that special for us every single time. And I think that's why we come back again and again, like, never really want it to stop. And
it's definitely, I think, you know, as Taylor said, like, me and Toby and I were very much in that mindset of, like, we honestly thought that we needed to try and do something a bit different to what everyone else was trying to do. And, like, the one angle of it was, and I think more people are kind of cottoning onto it now, but, you know, for us, you know, my angle and everything I do is charity. It's always like, how can I fundraise for charity? And that's the reason why I'm like that, is because my grandparents ran a charity, and because my grandparents ran a charity, it was, like, drilled into me as a kid of, like, my granddad used to give me, like, £3 to mow the lawn, which as a kid I was like, 300 penny sweets, it's pretty good, you know. But he would sit there with the £3 coins on his hand. This is before £2 coins. Now I sound old. He'd sit there with £3 coins in his hand, and he'd be like, "Right, you can have two of them. One of them is going in the charity box." Like, we used to have those little plastic things that you could shake around, and he's like, "You don't need three. Two's enough for you." And that was, like, drilled into me as a kid, like, from a very, very young age. My grandparents ran an animal charity. My nan and her sisters mainly ran it, and my granddad just sort of sat there on the side pretending to be a grumpy man, basically.
Set Kitty off crying soon. Anything to do with charity.
Well, he always used to say that he didn't. My nan looked after cats. She looked after the cats in the charity. And he was always like, oh, I don't like cats, bloody cats, all this sort of thing. And then if no one was looking, he'd be sitting there with a cat, like stroking it away, like giving it little squidges and stuff like that, like feeding them. He had one cat called Minnie that was like his baby, literally like his baby. He used to walk around with Minnie like a little baby, but he wouldn't do it in front of anyone because he didn't want people to. He was like, he's quite old fashioned and he's like, I'm the man, I don't want to play with a cat and all this. It's definitely a generational thing. And, you know, we always referred to him as like the silverback gorilla because he's a big, hairy, grey-haired man. And my nan, as I say, my nan had 5 brothers and sisters and they all ran different parts of the charity. So like my nan did cats, one did dogs, one did like farm animals, one did reptiles, and one did like just anything else, basically. So like, for example, the one that did reptiles, she mainly had like got loads of like tortoises, and she's one of the sisters that's still alive. She's like, I think she's 100 maybe now, and she's still got like 7 tortoises. Like one of them's got like wheels for back legs and stuff like that. Like it's really
that's adorable.
Yeah. But they all looked after different bits of it. But yeah, it was very much drilled into me as a kid that there's was to fundraise. Like I used to go to the boot sales. My nan used to put on boot sales, go to the boot sales and help like set it up and hot dogs, put hot dogs in rolls, sell hot dogs, that kind of stuff. And that was like our family thing that we used to do. Like my mum maybe didn't get that involved in it, but my parents split up when I was really young. And I spent more time with my grandparents than probably my parents when I was a kid. So it was like you got roped into this like being involved in the charities and doing all this kind of stuff. So that's always been my angle, is fundraising for charities. And it's very important to me. And it's, I think, you know, whether it's the work that Movember does, Women's Aid does, or the Pace Centre does, that's kind of become the three that I've sort of gone across now. And I think that's with Women's Aid, it's a lot for the support of women who are in domestic not good relationships, shall we say, suffering with like domestic violence, quite a lot of that side of it, but also kids that are in those kind of situations as well. Movember, I think primarily has been from the mental health aspect and how they've supported me through some not very good times. But also not to discount the work they do for supporting like men's testicular cancer awareness, as well as the mental health side of it. And then Pace is, that angle kind of came from when I started cycling. A very good friend of mine introduced me to this club that fundraised for a charity that supports kids with cerebral palsy. And that charity is kind of like being, that was the first sort of charity that I really pushed fundraising for, because it's a much smaller charity than the others. And I've got, you know, I have a nephew who is, he has minor cerebral palsy, but he's also very autistic. And I've got a friend who's got a son that's got cerebral palsy as well. And so like there's a connection to that charity and all the charities. And on the same like line, personally feel that there's a connection to Steezy and what you're doing, because I, as a straight white 30 something male, think, and I'm going to try and make sure I'm wording this in the way that my brain wants it to word. I understand that I come from maybe a stance of what could be seen as privilege, whether that's in a working environment, a lifestyle environment, you know, whatever it is. But I empathize and understand that there are many people who aren't in that situation, and whether that's how you've been born, you know, where you're from, whatever it is, whatever your orientation is, like I can empathize with that. And I think that I got really opened up to that when I was at university, and because I studied architecture, but I studied a degree at Ravensbourne, which is a small university in Greenwich, and I studied a degree which was run by a guy called Leighton Reed, who was and is probably what but definitely was one of the he was like the first pretty successful black architect who's bisexual, and it really opened, you know, in my, I guess, like teens and early 20s, really opened my mind up to a lot of things. That discussion about sexuality and race, that was something that I hadn't had at school, because I went to a school in Kent, which was very white dominated. And also my secondary school was a boys' school. So that was quite common, the part of Kent that I grew up in, is like secondary schools were often boys' or girls' school. And that was how it was. But that going to that, I chose to go to that university because I wanted to be taken a bit out of a comfort zone that I maybe hadn't, you know, to learn and understand something that I hadn't truly understood, whether that was about privilege and equality, understanding people's different backgrounds. And also, I guess the fact that was really good about that course is later made a real point of making sure that the every class, being a white British person, male or female, was the minority. It was so diverse in like getting people from other cultures, other countries and other backgrounds. And I fundamentally think that has shaped me into the kind of person I am now, because I don't think, especially in architecture, that's very common at all. It's a very white male dominated industry. And having someone like Leighton, who still is like a mentor to me, I still talk to him quite a lot, even though I don't even work in the industry, but having someone like that, who, you know, really, I wouldn't say like force fed it down his students' neck, but really like tried to showcase diversity in the best possible context, and show that in architecture, you didn't have to be a white guy to be successful, you know. He would regularly sort of organize talks and lectures from people from all over the world, from all different races and backgrounds. And, you know, that for me was really a real, like, almost like enlightening point at an age where I was very susceptible. And then when I started getting into cycling, I think in a probably a similar context to everyone here, I found it very... And it's not. I'm not saying this is necessarily a bad thing, but a lot of the older clubs are very male dominated and white male dominated as well. Maybe some of them have a bit of a laddish culture, and that's fine. That's absolutely fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But there has to be something better for everyone else. And I know I've gone on a massive tangent and a rant here, but what I'm trying to say is like what you three have done has allowed for other people to do similar things in a very good way across the world, not just like UK based, not just London based, like globally. It's done a lot of good. Yeah, that was a really big rant. I'm sorry, I had quite a lot of emotions in that. I wanted to get it off my chest. Basically, I can't ever not big you up. Because I'm like incredibly proud of you. Like, this podcast is just going to be like a freaking
Chris. Yeah, that was a lot. I think what I'm going to add to that, and what's like coming up for me that I'd like to share, first of all, is thank you. But also, yeah, just about thinking, like feeling like change is actually happening, because sometimes it can be really like bleak out there, and it's quite easy to be you know, like get in a rut about how the world is or whatever. And going back to my point earlier of saying like I feel very happy and like included in my cycling community now, and it's like such a wonderful thing, that sometimes I forget that there is still work to be done. Like sometimes I'm just like cruising in my own world, and I'm like, oh yeah, like got this thing over here and like this group over here, and like it's all, you know, it fills my heart up, it's great. But actually a few times recently, I've talked to a few different people who I'm gonna call it, that I've been coming up against some like really old school patriarchal energy recently. The kind of energy that I'm sort of like, oh wow, like you're still here and you're still thinking like this. Wow, like I forgot that that's still a thing. And a lot of it is like very like good-hearted people, probably like similar maybe to some of these people that we're talking about, like in older clubs, you know, people who just haven't branched out like you intentionally tried to do, to sort of like look at the world differently and be less sort of like sheltered and only with hanging out with people who look exactly like you. And the energy that I do come up against, like the comment is sort of like, cycling is the most inclusive thing I've ever seen in my life. Like anyone can get on a bike. It's there for everyone. It's open. Like it's the most beautiful thing in the world. Like there's nothing wrong with it. You know, there's nothing to fix. You know, it's there. And I've only ever seen and come against friendly faces and welcoming faces, and I've never seen, you know, racism or sexism in my club or whatever. And it's that sort of argument that is still lingering around sometimes, and it's always well intentioned, but to it I will say that that unless there is sort of a very deliberate action or some kind of effort to change things, that nothing will change. So I guess that's, I don't know, maybe I've gone on a tangent now, but I've, yeah, that anecdote about sort of that that old school energy that I've been coming up against recently has just sort of woken me back up and been like, no, keep doing what you're doing, it is still needed, I guess, is the message I'm trying to get across.
If I can add to that as well, and like, not saying that you, Chris, or Toby are that energy whatsoever, because you were the ones that reached out to us, is like, what I found really special about the first Not A Thing was it was you inviting Steezy along to kind of like help learn and grow and create that environment that you want to see, and that we were kind of doing already in our own spaces. And I found that ride in particularly so special because we all got to the end and it felt like we'd accomplished so much together, like in terms of actually just getting there and just being on the road together and raising the money that we did for the charities. And it just felt like such a like awesome weekend. But I think one thing that I took away from it that was so, so special was like just so many faces on the road. I mean, we all got to the first point at the end of the first day, but we'd kind of cross paths throughout the day at various cafes or points on the road. And then we all stayed together and kind of got up, had coffee, breakfast. And then there was everyone waiting at the finish line at the coast on the other end. Yeah. And it was just so, so awesome. Just kind of like there was all these different riders chatting together. And like you said, kind of sharing stories and experiences. And that's what needs to happen more, I feel.
I agree. Completely agree. I do completely. I think that the first one we did, the big successes of it were, you know, everyone waiting at the end. The fact that, and the other bit that I thought was such a great success was that we all stayed in the same location. So everyone was there and could, you know, everyone stayed up and waited. So every group was in, which I loved. I thought that was amazing. Didn't matter how tired people were, they stayed up and waited. But everyone sort of hung around, shared a beer, had some pizza, and just, you know, that's the... I feel like one of the best ways that things get better is sharing those stories and conversations and people listening and hearing people's backgrounds. And, you know, we're all different people from different, you know, walks of life and different situations, but we've all got incredibly personal things that can benefit someone else and our, you know, our way of life and our way of thinking. And as I think we've all kind of alluded to, like being taken out of your similar circle of people and being removed from that can allow you to grow as a person massively. So I really hope we continue to do these rides as well. Like I think after the second one, which we did a couple of weeks ago, like I was pretty burnt out because I just finished, I think I'd been back from Badlands by like, yeah.
About. And then Dad wasn't there as well, so.
And Dad wasn't there, which was quite hard.
Big dads.
Because Dad broke his back, basically. Get well, God, Toby. Damn it, Dad. Yeah, get well, Toby. He's riding again, though, so it's all good.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, so nice to see.
He's back on it. So I think, you know, we haven't, like, as a small group of people, we haven't sat down and then talked about what next. But I'm, you know, I think everyone's keen to keep things go, or at least I hope so. Keen to keep. This is where Toby listens to this, and I get a text going, "I'm out." It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. And I think, especially after the first one, like, we maybe, I don't think any of us expected it to go the way it did, in a good way, in a really positive way. I think, you know, we sort of penned it out for anyone that hadn't heard about the rides. We penned it out that there were three groups. I led a group, Toby led a group, and you three led a group with Charlotte as well. So there was a few of you leading groups. And the second one was very similar. I led a group, but we had Andy leading the group to replace Toby. Is he there, Taylor?
Yeah, but he can't hear us.
Oh, fine. I would, like, subtly wave behind him.
He was actually slightly offended he was not invited to this.
Oh, sorry.
Poor Andy.
I'm sorry. And then, so it was basically we had three groups again, and we worded it. We tried to, and I'm very keen to change the wording of this as speeds. I don't think it should be worded as speeded groups. And I've kept referring it to slow, slow, and slow, because it doesn't really matter how quick you do it. Like, for example, my group was, like, worded as the fast group, but we actually were, I think, on the last day of the Lakes and Dales loop that we just did, we weren't the first to finish. We were, like, I don't know, we might have actually been the last to finish, in fact. So, like, it doesn't really matter, but, like, the groups are, because we kind of, I think because we had this kind of argument of the speeds as well, some people found that easier to know where to position themselves. And I understand that. But the bits I really loved is the bits that, to me, on both rides that we've done, that's really important, is that crossover point where the groups meet and talk and stop. Like, for example, I think it was on the Lakes and Dales loop where, I've had my flu jab today and I can't lift my arm up. It hurts. I didn't realise it until I did it then. On the Lakes and Dales loop, there's a point, I think it was on the, there's one point that really stuck in my mind. I think it was on the last day where my group and your group all ended up at the top of the hill and just stood there for a while. And I got dropped by my group as well at that point. So I had to get, like, chased back on. I can't remember why. I think I dropped something and subsequently got dropped and everyone rode away. And so everyone was just, they were waiting for me at the top of the hill, and you were all at the top of the hill, and it was like that was a very good time for me to be dropped, because it meant that people stopped, waited and chatted a bit. And that's where, as we say, these crossing of stories is important. It's good. Sound like someone that wants things to happen now. But I guess, like Taylor said, like, things are good, but there's still a lot of work to be done, 100%. What would be the kind of things that you three would suggest to people, like, who want to help out more and get involved? What would be the next steps that could really help people?
I think this is a really good question, because it's one that we get asked a lot.
And I think part of the question is, when you ask someone, how can we help? I think the first step is recognizing why you're asking that person.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if you approach Steezy because you want to reach, like, more women, non-binary or trans riders, then that probably means that you need to start by going, why aren't they coming? Or if you want to include more riders of color and you approach the Ultra Distance Scholarship or the Women of Color Cycling Group or different, like, Ride for Unity, different groups like that, you've got to ask, why, what am I doing that stops it from happening? And a lot of the time, it's, in fact, 90% of the time, and if you're asking this question 100% of the time, it's nothing that you're doing on purpose,
mm-hmm.
but there's definitely things that you're not even aware of happening that you should address before coming to speak to these groups? Because I think a lot of the time what happens is people come and they go, I just can't get women to come on my ride. And it's like, well, how are you reaching them? How are you doing that? And then actually it turns out that the reason no women are coming on your ride is because when you started your group, you followed everyone on Instagram that you personally follow, and they're all the guys that you ride with normally. And then you realize that actually no women or no non-binary people or no people of color are seeing your Instagram posts or whatever. And so it's like quite nice to start with what can you do personally before you go to ask for the help. But then the second thing, which I guess is kind of cheeky on our part, but is still a valid point, is that what can you offer in return when you're asking for that help? Because I think it's really easy. We've had a lot of people ask for our help, and it's become like, sometimes it can feel like it's a checkbox exercise. And I think that what you and Toby did, which was really incredible for the whole of this experience, was you asked for our help and then helped elevate Steezy,
mm-hmm.
showed us to new audiences, got the word out through your Instagram, your website, and were like, look, come join this incredible group. You share our stories, and that's how you can help. So I think going to find the groups of people that you want to reach, everyone will be open to helping if there's a mutual benefit and everyone can build a stronger community together.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, more people on bikes is more people to ride with. And if you're a brand, it's more people buying your stuff.
Very simply put that. Yeah.
I don't know. But Taylor is, I'll plug it. Is currently going through
her applicants for the ultra distance scholarship with her team on the ultra distance scholarships. And I think that something like that's incredible, because Taylor will tell you so much more. But it's not just recognizing that there's a need to reach other people, it's recognizing the barriers and then finding a way to take them away or change them, if Taylor.
Thank you, Kitty. I mean, yeah, I think that, yeah, it, I mean, Kitty said it already about like exactly how to help is like tricky. And I think that when you are reaching out to groups specifically to make your events more inclusive, like you have to figure out exactly what you're asking for. Like, are you asking for labor? Do you already have some kind of structure to an event that you like have in mind? Or are you just reaching out and being like, hey, can we like put our name on something that you're doing, please? Like, that's definitely not what you guys did. And like everyone here, like on this podcast right now, we all understand how much it really does take a community to like make things happen. And I think, Chris, this goes back even circling back to your talking about like charity, like the structure of a charity all is like this beautiful thing that relies on like a bunch of people's input to make like a special thing happen, right? Like, it's kind of beautiful in the way that it's like people powered, right? Mm-hmm. It's all about being resourceful to like make magic happen, but like together. And like the more people that are on board, the greater the output.
See, I think we should definitely talk about it a little bit. The ultra distance scholarship, it's probably the coolest scholarship that you could get in the world, right?
I mean, I hope that people replicate it.
Yeah.
You know, I hope that it's not the only thing like it. And yeah, I totally will take this opportunity to plug that right now we are running a prize draw to raise money for the scholarship, which is now a nonprofit community interest company. And yeah, I would love for it to be able to pay someone to help run it. So that's the goal at the moment with the scholarship, which is super exciting. And there's only 11 days left, and you could win a Staircycles OMG mountain bike. There's a size small, a medium, and a large. And you should please go check it out, because like it is a nonprofit, and like the structure of a charity relies on a bunch of people chipping in to make something happen. The scholarship, I mean, like, oh gosh, it's just like completely blown my mind. It's going into its third year. It supports three riders every year to train for an ultra race, and has like an intensely comprehensive package attached to it now, because so many people have said yes and gotten on board with it. So you know, they receive a custom bicycle, they receive bike fitting, they receive one-on-one coaching, they receive a mentorship for an entire year, you know, they receive kit, cycling tech, bicycle computers, and more this year to be announced, which is like really exciting. And the community that has come out of the scholarship has also been mind-blowing and beautiful, and it's only growing. And sort of the people that have gone through the scholarship are now mentors, you know, and are now on the board and are now on the selection committee, and it's just like this machine that is expanding, and definitely changing the ultra cycling scene in the UK. Like, I can say that confidently, you know. There were about roughly, and I say roughly because this was not something that was statistically managed, but there were around 4 people of color on the start line of GB Duro this year. You know, I would say one of the UK's most prominent and well-known cycling ultra races, and three of those four were from the scholarship. So I mean, like, that alone I think says a lot, and that is what the scholarship is doing, and it's really exciting, and that's all down to everyone involved.
It's a you know, fantastic opportunity for people as well, and like, I'll put a link in the description for people who want to potentially win one of these very nice looking bikes. With amazing, the paint schemes are stunning as well.
They did really well at Bespoke. They were showstoppers.
They were amazing looking bikes. And if people don't know Steyr as well, go check out Steyr. They make lovely road, gravel, mountain bike, fixed gear, basically everything, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Custom hand-built steel bicycles and wheels. Yeah.
But you haven't made no unicycle yet, right?
No unicycle. You know, I'll talk to Sam about it. Missing a trick.
Oh, there's a big demand for unicycles. Big demand for them. No TT bike either, eh? Can you imagine?
Are you suggesting something, Chris?
I've always
special collaboration.
Yeah.
I think the next big thing will be not a thing does unicycle, and this is where Stay and Make custom unicycle bikes, and we cycle one of our routes on unicycles.
Yeah, I'm keen. My dad, actually, useless plug to my dad. He's very good at unicycling, very, very good at it, and juggling at the same time. And he still has the unicycle that he, so basically, at a point of his life, he was in a circus, and he used to unicycle and juggle.
Awesome. Yeah. I was an absolute disaster on a unicycle.
I've got no hand-eye coordination, so I can't juggle. But the unicycling, I used to try it out a bit as a kid, and it's very hard. Very, very hard.
You say that like you're surprised.
I wasn't surprised. I was surprised at how good my dad is at it, and the fact that he's still good at it. Like, he just hasn't lost it. He just jumps on it. He's still got the one that he had from when he was in his 20s and just jumps on it, like, slings it under, carries on, goes. And I'm like, this is like a 62-year-old guy on a unicycle. Like,
that's awesome. Fair.
Yeah.
Like, he's invited to not a thing unicycle.
Yeah, he might need to get fit. He's currently riding around on an e-bike most of the time, which he's taken the limiter off and put a bigger chain ring on it so it does 50 miles an hour.
Amazing.
The flat bar. Like town bike e-bike.
Awesome.
Yeah, and last time I spoke to him about it, he was like, I've got a 40 four tooth chainring on it, but I think I want to put 58 on it. It's a belt drive e-bike as well.
And I'm like, wow.
Dad, I was like, Dad, I don't even think belt drive 58 chain rings exist. He's like, yeah. Ah, but there'll be one somewhere. Anyway, yeah, people, if, as you're saying, there's 5 days as of the 7th of November left to enter for the bikes.
11. There's 11 days.
There's 11 days. Oh,
yeah,
good.
It closes on the 18th.
Oh, I thought it was not that soon. Okay, there's 11 days left. So by the time this podcast goes live, there will be 11, 10, maybe 9 days left. Actually, I might make live tomorrow. 10 days left.
Quick turnaround.
Yeah. So there's not long left to enter. Go and check out these bikes. They are very beautiful, you know, handmade steel frames, made in London. Great looking wheels, great looking paint jobs. And they are fundamentally supporting something that's doing a huge amount of good, especially in the ultra cycling scene, which is a weird, I mean, cycling professionally, if we look at the professional side of the sport, when I talk professional, I'm talking like Tour de France, the paid, you know, big teams, men's and women's side. There's not a lot of diversity in the men's or women's side of the sport at the top level. Hello, Marshall. Hello, buddy. Dog's turned up. Yeah, he's gone. Yeah, there's not a lot of diversity in the top end of the sport. It's slowly getting better. It is getting, we're actually seeing more people of colour racing at the top end. You know, the big one that really stuck out to me this year was Binyamin Girmay, who races for Monty Intermarché Gobert. I think that's the full name of the team. I can't really remember. But, you know, he won one of the classics and was like up there in Tour de France stages. And that was awesome to see. Like, someone like, you know, seeing someone who's like sprinting against some of the best riders in the world. And, you know, he's Eritrean background, and seeing someone like that, who's now probably like one of the most wanted male riders in the professional peloton. Like, that's great. It's fantastic. So we're starting to see it. There's a lot of work to be done, as I think we've all kind of alluded to, and not just at the grassroots level, at the top level as well. But things like the Ultra Distance Scholarship, which is offering that opportunity for people to go and do, as Taylor said, like probably the best ultra race in the United Kingdom. I mean, I'd say that.
What, GB Duro?
Yeah. Like, it's mega.
I know. I think it's like probably the most well-known. I will say, though, that this coming year, 2023, the race will be back to the Pan-Celtic race again.
Ooh.
Also very, a very good exciting one.
I know.
I always forget about Pan-Celtic. And I shouldn't do, because I've done a podcast with them. But
I know. I was just about to say, didn't you just interview Mally?
Yeah, I interviewed Mally not long ago. Pan-Celtic's been on my radar for years as well. I've not done either GB Giro or Pan-Celtic. They've both been on my radar for years. And the reason why I nearly did GB Giro a few years ago, but what year are we in? 2021, I nearly did GB Giro, but I had a quite a bad injury from the national 100-mile TTs, and I just couldn't shift it. And there's no point in me doing a race across the UK with a bad knee. And then Pan-Celtic, my only reason I haven't done it is because I have said I will do it when it goes to the Isle of Man, because my family's from the Isle of Man. And to me, it'd be really cool.
Did Matt say anything about that when you interviewed him? About which year?
He said it could be the 5th anniversary year, but to do it, he's saying that you might have to have done a previous edition to be able to do the 5th anniversary one. So I was like, yeah, I was a bit like, oh man, okay. But
Do it this year and then go to the Isle of Man and pave the way for them.
yeah, just like see your dot just like completely deviate from the route.
Oh, he's gone off course. Oh well. Pan-Celtic is a race, like, if people who don't know it, it's a generally a preset route across the Celtic countries, I guess. That's probably the best way of wording it. So quite often incorporates Wales, Ireland, parts of the UK. I wonder if it's going to go...
Oh. There he is.
That was really weird.
Could you hear us?
No, my whole thing just shut down and vanished. Oh, wow. Yeah. Shit. Well, hopefully it's kind of...
We just derailed your podcast, so...
Well, shit.
Did it save the recording?
I don't know. It just, the screen went blank and then it just said connecting and then it opened back up into this call. I can't check until we close the call.
Oh, no, don't. We all jinxed it at the start by talking about how...
Yeah, we did. Oh, no.
Oh, man. Well, fingers crossed.
Well, we were talking about how you're going to do Pan-Celtic this year.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Maybe that's what jinxed it. So, yeah, it's on my radar. It's very much on my radar. I think it's another fantastic... I mean, we're very lucky to have such an amazing country in terms of cycling. Hey, Marshall, hey, come on, come here, up, yeah. We're very lucky to have such a Marshall's appeared. Wait, he's gone. An incredible country for the range of cycling, in the United Kingdom. It's beautiful. I think it's underrated as a place
to ride. I agree. I love it here. People are always like, you're Canadian. Why aren't you Canada's the best? And I'm like, I never want to leave here. I love it. The riding here is amazing. But more than that, actually, what is keeping me here is the community. Genuinely, the cycling community in the UK is unreal. I don't think people in the UK realize how amazing it is. I think also probably due to the size as well, because I'm from Ontario, so I feel and maybe I just didn't get into cycling enough when I was living there, and I still love where I'm from and the cycling there is also amazing. But in a different way. But it's the community's Canada's so big that it's there can't be a cohesive Canadian cycling community. In my world, in my dreams I would love there to be, and maybe I'm just out of touch now because I've been here for so long, but I think that the community here is something super special. It blows me away, honestly.
It's a I always think of it it's a small island, and there's a lot of people on that small island. So there's a lot of people.
We thought we lost you again, but you're back. Can you say that again?
Oh man, my internet connection is unstable. It keeps popping up. I was saying it's a small island, but it's there's a lot of people on the island who do ride. But also there's definitely places like London, which I've lived in London for 12 years. And how I think of London is there's a very few places in London that are very, I guess, good for riding, really. It's kind of the parks, right? Now, because of that, that forces a community of cyclists, a huge community of cyclists, to be in certain places at one time. And one of the big strengths of London as a place for cycling is that, going back to that diversity, is you're kind of, people are forced together from very different backgrounds in London. And similar, not the same in Manchester, in my opinion, but there is similar in other cities. And I feel that is one of the strengths of city cycling and riding, is the amount of people and community that grows out of that. I don't think you quite get that so much outside of the cities, to be honest with you. But on the flip side, the riding in cities generally is pretty crap. That's the toss up. That is the toss up. You're kind of all in the same situation if you do live in the cities. And I think everyone who rides together in the cities kind of knows that, and you kind of bond on that in a weird way. One of the things I've loved about the rides we've done is we've taken people, a lot of people who do live in London or Manchester or other cities, Leeds, et cetera, and taken them to these places which are, beautiful countryside. That some people, there's a couple in my group who'd only been out of London two or three times. and blown away by it. And that's incredible to see, you know.
But that's like a huge reason of why Alice and I were leaving. And I think the not a thing just kind of made us realize exactly that we were making the right decision, because of the internet and all of its badness, you can still keep in touch with all of the people that you know in London and like ride with them. But I found like the anti-bike sentiment is growing a bit, which I don't want to like catastrophize the situation, but I think it's getting harder to cycle in London.
Yeah.
And the community online and the community that you build that meet up together is so strong now that you don't have to live there anymore to be part of a scene, which is so nice, because the riding out of London is so much better, like the Lakes and Dales so much better, the Peak District so much better. So it's incredible. And I think that not a thing and rides like that are great because we brought together all of those people, so you don't miss out on any of it.
Exactly. And I think you know, you summed it up really well there. The online, there's so much many strengths. For all the flaws and weaknesses to social media, there are some real very, very good, strong elements to social media and the internet, and being able to keep in touch and interact with a community like what Steezy has done. We're going full circle here. I'm down with this. Like what you've done with Steezy is so, so valuable to more people than the people who set them up realize, you know. Massively so. Like an online presence is worth its weight in gold to people who can't necessarily be there in person. Like I think of my close group of friends that I lived with in London when I was there. Now four of them live in Newcastle, two of them live in Leeds. No, wait, not Leeds, York. That's, should get that right. Two of them live in York, four live in Newcastle. Another couple live in Edale, and you know, we're all, I mean, Edale's really close to me, but we're all, it's not made us any more distant. We're all still regularly talking to each other. There's still a couple of friends in London, but I was the last one to leave. There's also a couple who are in Jersey as well, but yeah, I was the last one to leave, and like to me it's like seeing how they were still, you know, being kept very much in the, you know, the communities, what made me feel more comfortable about leaving as well. I think the whole, you know, pandemic maybe heightened people's susceptibility to exploring these opportunities about not necessarily living in a city, and whether that's through remote working or literally upping your lives, changing your career, whatever it is. I think it opened those opportunities to so many people in a very positive way. For all the bad, and I'm not saying that in any way that the whole COVID situation was good. Of course I'm not, but you have to look at some of the strengths that have come out of it, and the kind of the community aspects and the opportunities that it's given other people are definitely some of those strengths.
It's funny that we're having this conversation now, because literally Kitty and Alice are in the middle of leaving London, and I've literally just left London last week.
Yeah.
Like it's kind of like, it's bizarre, but yeah, I don't feel like the magic of social media can totally remedy a lot of that. And but also like in Steezy, like there has been a bit of a like open conversation about like decentralizing London as like the place where everything's happening, and that's coming from people in London but also people out of London, and like because we have people who are Steezy people all across the country. You know, and it like, you know, it can have hubs in cities, but it really does feel like a cohesive sort of Steezy can be anywhere thing. Which is really great. And but also like the magic of social media, like some of my very best friends now that I've met through cycling and social media cycling, like that, like Instagram did facilitate that.
Yeah.
Like some of my like most precious relationships now, which is like pretty amazing.
Mm. It's yeah, I mean, you summed it up better than I could, to be honest with you there. But I will put one caveat in, is I do wonder if it's an age related thing as well, because we're all a bit older. I'd imagine that maybe some that I still could see the appeal as someone coming out of university to being in London. But you know, I think I do also, to flip that argument again, think that the pandemic changed a lot of people's mindsets about the need to be in an office-based job or in a city or whatever it is. You know, I really do. But yeah, Taylor, you worded it better than I could, in the sense of how, you know, social media has had so many strengths to so many people, but also allowed people to make their best mates out of it. Like, the group of people that I started riding with in London when I first moved to London was all because one guy set up a WhatsApp group, which is still going to this day. It's called What Is It? Or What Is This? I think it's what it's called now. And basically, this WhatsApp group was like where you get talking to someone on Instagram, and then but like, oh yeah, do you want to join this WhatsApp group? We meet the bin by London Zoo in the morning for a ride. And that's how it started. And the WhatsApp group's still there. And now the people in that WhatsApp group, I think there's maybe 3 out of probably 20 that live in London now. Like, and that's their choice. They've chosen to stay, which is absolutely fine. But it just shows that WhatsApp group is still, you know, still active. Like, one of them lives in, I don't even know where he lives now. He's like all over the world. He's the chef for EF. And he's always like messaging where he is in the world and what he's up to. And like, it's really cool. Really, really cool. So I'm going to wrap things up slightly. What's next for Steezy? What's the next plans?
So I've been waiting to plug this, but
go on.
In the time. We recently became a CIC as well, which we had a lot of help from Taylor and the Ultra Distance Scholarship. But with the move, for me and Alice, it frees up a lot of time. And so we're hoping to do a lot inspired by Chase the Last Long Days, but a lot more like multi-day weekend trips, because I think that is, if you're from Brighton and the ride is in Newcastle, you're not going to go for a day ride. But I think these bikepacking trips, it's almost like a mini holiday, you know. We saw the whole of the Lake District in a weekend, so we're going to try and do one of those trips sort of like every quarter. And then also we're going to be hitting up a lot more events. But if anyone ever listens to this in London, Pow, one of our ride leaders, is going to carry on doing the rides from Regent's Park every week, and mountain biking trips and stuff like that. But I think we're going to step it up a lot more this year in terms of actual riding and having it less, as Taylor said, centralized on London, because I think you end up serving an overserved community if you focus on London, whereas we've got so many people doing rad things around. And also joining forces with some more amazing groups and amazing people to build this wonderful new emerging community.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, there's a Kitty's working on a lot of things, which she's probably left unsaid for a reason, but there's some very, very, very cool things in the pipeline at the moment, which I guess we'll just say, watch this space.
Unicycle. Kitty's designing a unicycle.
I have 10 already.
Let that one slip.
Oh, cool. What's the best way for people to be kept up to date with everything that's going on with Steezy?
For now, it's the Instagram, but this is all part of like Out of London More Time. Our website will be ready for 2023 with an events calendar and a mailing list and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, it's definitely our Instagram, which I know isn't helpful for anyone who doesn't have it. But we also have a Discord, which if people want to join, message us on Instagram or email us at hello@steezycollective.com and we can add you to the Discord.
Amazing. You three are doing amazing things. Please don't stop.
Thank you for having us on this podcast. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. I think the important thing to do to say is that, you know, there's, what is that? Sorry, I keep finding like random. I have like an old like architect's cutting mat on my desk, and it's one that I had in my office years ago, and I keep finding things in it. I think the important thing to say is like everyone is still learning and understanding, and it's always going to be a continual learning and steps forward for everybody. And what you three are doing is incredibly powerful and positive for the cycling community. And I'm very proud that we've been able to do some stuff together. Anyone listening, go and follow Steezy. When the website goes live, get on that mailing list, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. I'm going to go get some dinner, I think.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us, Chris.
Thanks for reaching out originally that one fateful day, because that's why we're here. So thank you.
Yeah.